Good morning, everyone. Welcome again to Sunday service. My name is Lahari, and this is Biraj. We are married Nayaswamis in the Ananda tradition, and we've been coming to Scotts Valley for, 10, 12, 15, something, a long time. It's been a while since we've been here, so many of the faces we know. We've shared satsang with before, and some of you are new to us, so we're happy to be here and to share. Today the topic is on receptivity, the reading from St. John. You know, St. John was sort of a very mystical disciple. He had a lot of inner experiences that he shared in his days with Christ. And there's a beautiful song that Swami writes, "I was caught up in ecstasy." This is from the oratorio, and it's attributed to his connection with John. We're talking today about receptivity. John said, "To as many as received him, to him gave he the power to become the sons of God." So receptivity is a key. Yogananda's talking about attunement. And how do we receive what God wants for us to have? What does God want for us to have? He wants us to have perfect joy, perfect bliss, perfect love. These are the gifts that God's trying to give us. And we want to receive them. Of course we want to receive them. Isn't that what we all want in our hearts? You know, we mentioned one of the words that came through the reading of Whispers was contentment. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, it mentions that contentment is the highest virtue. And who doesn't want to be content? I mean, you know, I go through periods, I'm content for a while, isn't that lovely? And I just take it for granted. I'm going to always be content. I'm happy, I feel good, I'm healthy. I take those positive things for granted, really. It feels like my nature. And I sort of think sometimes it's always going to be that way. But still, it doesn't stay. It goes into something else called, you can name it, feeling distant from God, feeling uninspired, feeling dry in our devotion, feeling too tired to go on, and weary in the body. We were laughing with Satya, and he said, "Well, you know, we 20-year-olds, he lit the fires for us for the fire ceremony. And we said, 'Yes, you can light the fire, you know, come light the fire.' And he said, 'Yeah, we 20-year-old, we really have to light the fire, because, you know, here at Ananda, for a while we were seeing the audience was all full of gray hairs. And it was like, where's the next generation going to be? And so little by little we're seeing the renewal in newer bodies of the people who will take this work out. We were just in Mumbai, India, visiting with two friends, Narayani and Sherjo, and they're a little older than Satya, but not too much. They're still that next generation. For the longest time, we kept Biraj and I, we knew them in Pune when they were a lot younger, and now they're, I don't know, in their 30s, early
30s.
So we knew them when they were just new to Ananda, and they were very young, and so we started calling them the kids, you know. So how, we're going to go visit the kids. I mean, in a way, they feel like they are actually of an age that they could be our children, but we're really good friends. But we realize, you know, it's not about the age of the body. It's, of course, about the age of the spirit. But there's a renewing, refreshing kind of feeling when we visited them in Pune. They're starting a new center. You know, Yudhisthira might remember way long ago when there was a new center, his first new center. And
how many years ago was that?
Which new center?
Well,
when you started
over in Boulder Creek.
When we started Boulder Creek, it was in 1996.
Okay.
That's 25 years, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
So, you know, it reminds us what it's like when you first come on the spiritual path and you think, I remember I went up to Swami Kriyananda after I'd been at Ananda for a year, and I dabbled in a lot of things, I'd done a lot of things, I'd had adventures, but you know, I still was seeking. I was 32 years old and I was really desperately seeking at that point. And I read the AY and I read all the books and, oh good, I finally found my path, I finally found my guru. I walked up to him with this great energy. I said, Swami, I know what I want. I mean, for me, just knowing what I wanted was a big... I mean, my mother would take me shopping. I'd go, like that. I mean, I just didn't like that much in the world. I liked it when people were happy and there was love all around me, but otherwise I wasn't all that interested. So I tried to, you know, find ways that I could be interested. But I finally found it. I knew what I wanted and I was absolutely thrilled. I went charging up to Swami Kriyananda at a big group satsang in the Expanding Light dining room after Sunday service. There was a lot of people visiting and it was just a big energy in the room. And he was standing by himself, which was unusual. So I marched right up to him. Swamiji, I know what I want. He looked at me like, okay, what are you going to say? I said, well, I want Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And those were the early days. And I thought it was just going to happen. You know, maybe he was going to touch me here or touch me there. And I was going to go into Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is the highest state of never losing that bliss consciousness of expanded, you know. And he looked at me in the wisdom of age and said, we have to get your feet on the ground. And what that meant is I had to walk the path, you know, that I'm still walking, to step by step take the next step closer to that state of perfect freedom. And what that state is, you know, what's in the way of us having that perfect receptivity and receiving the power of God? What's in the way? You know, we all have a list, right? For some of us, we have fear. You know, what would it be like if I really opened myself to God's will? What would happen? What would I lose? Some of us have, you know, attachments here and there in the... Promise of Immortality, a book, a longer session of the Rays readings that Swamiji wrote. He mentions, well, it's not that we don't receive. We're all, you know, it's why can't we receive God? Why can't we receive that perfect light and that perfect bliss in us? He said, well, we're so busy receiving a lot of other things. So it's sort of our receptors are tuned in to a lot of other things. You know, when will I be healthy? When will I be able to do this or that? When will I have the love I want, the house I want, the car I want, the job I want? You know, we're out there receiving, but we get so busy. Not that any of those things are bad, but they can somehow, when we're into them too much, take the place of that part of us that wants to receive God's love and God's joy and God's fulfillment in our own heart, like we sang that beautiful song, in my heart, Lord, ever so silently, I will always think of thee. And for me, one of the most powerful things on the spiritual path was to learn how to meditate and to go inside my own self, my own body, my own spine, my own heart, and feel that stillness that comes when you can meditate deeply. And that stillness is where I feel the most receptive. You know, I don't have a need to go anywhere or do anything or think anything or be different or be worried, or it's a stillness that's not nothingness. It's so full of... It's when I think as soon as I hit the stillness, and maybe many of you have felt this too, in nature or, you know, some moment that just takes you so outside of yourself with the wonder of life, of love, that everything, like the doors just automatically open. And at that time, at the same time, I feel like I'm receiving something so much bigger. And that contentment and that joy just is awakened in me. It's always there. We're on a path at Ananda of self-realization, and it's always good for me to remember to come back to the basics. What is it that we're doing here? You know, we've got centers, we've got techniques, we've got yoga postures, we've got Kriya, we've got a lot of things, administration, you know, we've got a lot of stuff going on, even though we're just dedicated to Ananda, which means perfect joy. What are we doing at Ananda? Well, self-realization is our religion, Yogananda called it. What kind of religion do you have? You're self-realizationists. Okay, what does that mean? Very simple definition. Self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that you are now
in the possession.
In possession of the kingdom of God, that you don't need to pray that it come to you, that God's omnipresence is your omnipresence. And all we have to do is improve our knowing. So that's what all the other things are about. The seva, the techniques, the dedication, all of those things are about improving our knowing, because it's already in there. And that's why we meditate. It's why we come together like this in satsang. We want to be reminded. We forget. I forget. You know, I just had a bout of this big bug, cold, flu, whatever you call it. Actually, one of the doctors, after the fact, after seeing me, sort of mentioned to a group, yeah, I think she had pneumonia. You know, it was like I was on pilgrimage and I was in bed about, you know, 2/3 of the time because cough, cough. You know, it was a battle. And during that time, it was even harder to remember, you know, to remember. But during that same pilgrimage, the days that I was able to get up and about, I looked forward to this pilgrimage. It was in the Holy Land. It was in Israel. And we went to Jerusalem. We stayed very close to the wall around the old city of Jerusalem. In our hotel, we could look out and see it. And we went to the sites where Christ was born, where he lived, where he had the whole story of his life was there. And there were many days of many pilgrimage visits that the group did, and people were so inspired. If you have a chance to go on a pilgrimage, even if it's to the Expanding Light, or, you know, we can do a pilgrimage to the backyard. Thoreau used to do that. You know, a devotee can take a pilgrimage anywhere. But it is some special thing when you go away, take the time, the money, the energy, everything to dedicate a time to just drinking in. And that was the pilgrimage for this 42-person group. So there I was thinking, I'm not sure. My pilgrimage could be lying in my bed enjoying that everybody else is out there, which it was in part, but I was able to get up and about, and I went. I kept hearing, so it was kind of a benefit, because I hear all the places that people had been in, their really favorite places. So I thought, I'll just go to the favorite places when I feel really well. So one of the favorite places was where Mary, the mother of Jesus' tomb, was. And this was in a little tiny, inside a cave. It was like a little area where there was an altar.
Much smaller than your boutique.
Yeah, that was about this big. And there was about this much room for people to walk in, and four people could be in front of the altar. And we were in many of these lines that, you know, people want to go and see these shrines. And so there were groups of, you know, 50, 100, 30, you know, just coming in streams all throughout the day. But somehow Divine Mother had a special blessing for me that day. And so Biraj and I went alone after hearing everybody else's story about how wonderful it was. So we walked in, and I looked around and I thought, okay, you know, this is one of those where you just have a, it's like the express lane. It's like a touch by. Usually that's what people do. There's only time to like touch, bow. Some people will put a picture there or their rosaries, and then they're on the way. It's just a drive by. Well, I was ready for a kneel by, I should call it, a kneel by. I walked in and I looked, much to my surprise, right at this corner at the end. There was this little niche in the wall of stone and a thing down here you could sit on. So I thought, my goodness, what good fortune. I'm really, really feeling blessed here because I can sit there. I can't stand that long. I can't kneel that long, but I can sit there. So I kind of went over and parked myself there. Then I became very self-conscious that my knees were in the way of the people who were trying to get in and have their moment. And everyone was so... Two things impressed me. They were hungry for what Divine Mother was going to give them, and they were really appreciative that they could have a blessing of being someplace where she had been, their version of Divine Mother had been. So I tucked myself, my knees in a little bit, And I found that there was even a little bit more room behind me. So I nestled myself ever closer until I was just almost fitting totally inside with almost none of me outside. So I felt comfortable there because I wasn't in anybody's way. And somehow having all my shoulders and everything against this little place, I just felt enclosed. And something happened to me there, like it does on pilgrimage. You know, everybody has their moments when it happens. And that was my moment of the whole pilgrimage. And I can't exactly say it in words, but what I felt was like I was being held by Divine Mother, in the form of Mary, but that all-accepting, all-loving instrument presence delivering God's energy to me in a way that was so tender and so loving and enfolding and accepting, contentment, peace, comfort, all of those things I felt in that spot, and I didn't want to leave. So I started having a little inner conversation with Divine Mother. Well, Divine Mother, I really like it here. I don't want to leave. But somebody else could sit here and they would have this and I should leave it for somebody else. And what I felt inwardly, whether it was wishful thinking or not, I don't know, but I felt inwardly, no, you stay. And it's still open, you know. People are still having their tour guides move them along anyway. They all had to move at that pace. But you don't have to. You can stay here. So then I realized Biraj was waiting for me, the other person I was with. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm making Biraj wait so long. Maybe I should get up and go for Biraj. Checked in again with Divine Mother. No, you don't have to go. So I did that one more time, and I thought, you know, feeling a little guilty that I was soaking it all up for myself. No, you don't have to go. I stayed there
45 minutes,
which was
everyone
unheard
else got
of. On a
45 seconds. Tried to go past,
but it was just a moment, like Divine Mother said, here, I have a place for you. I want you to have this. And I really just received it. I didn't worry. I mean, I worried, but I kept battling that. And I just continued to receive it as long as it was flowing. I didn't stop. And it just reminded me, you know, Divine Mother is everywhere. That's what the saints tell us, right? I have a few quick reminders of Divine Mother's presence. The Ananda tradition is very much about Divine Mother. Yogananda said, if you want to go to God, go right to Divine Mother. You know, you can do the rules and the regulations, you can do all the things right, you know, you can do the right numbers of kriyas and count the right way. You know, you can do it all perfectly. And that's good. And the more you can do that, the more you're priming the pump, the more you're helping yourself be ready to receive. It awakens things. But if you really want to get to God fast, go to Divine Mother. Just go right to Divine Mother. Just give your devotion and your love like a child, just loving its mother. What's more natural than to love your own mother if you had a good mother? And if you didn't, in your mind you have the ideal mother. You know, going to the ideal mother and just climbing up on her lap and saying, I love you, Mother. Here's my little thing I did at school today. I mean, as children, we know what it is to love a mother and to be loved by a mother. And that, Yogananda said, that's a way. Just really do that. There's Yogananda loved Divine Mother so much that he went away to the Himalayas in search of enlightenment at one point, the story goes. He met a man called
Master Mahashaya,
who was in bliss all the time. That was his role. He lived in a little cave or, you know, kutir, some little tiny place. And people just came, and he didn't see very many people. He was just very happy. His role was to just vibrate bliss, and he was just in bliss. And Yogananda found a way to see him. He went in and he was kneeling at his feet and he was looking his beatific face, so full of light and joy and expansion, the very thing that Yogananda wanted. And he was looking at him trying to get his attention. He was just so wrapped in bliss that he wasn't coming out of it. to talk to Yogananda, and finally he could hear him, Master Mahasaya, saying, "Oh, Divine Mother, I love you so much. You're so beautiful. I love you so much. You're so beautiful." And that made Yogananda even more intent, because he wanted Divine Mother. He wanted to have an experience of Divine Mother, to feel that joy. And so finally, he just, with his full energy, called on Master Mahasaya, and Master Mahasaya finally opened his eyes and said, "My, you know, you really are, you know, disrupting my meditation. What is it that you want?" And he said, "Oh, you are obviously communing with Divine Mother, and that's the thing I want most in the world. I really want Divine Mother. Can you bless me with an experience of Divine Mother?" Mahasaya said, "Well, you know, you're very sincere." I forget the exact words he said. Something like, "Go home and, you know, meditate." And so Yogananda went to his little meditation place, and he sat there and he meditated and he meditated and he meditated. And then he actually did see Divine Mother, an image of a beautiful light, a beautiful form. You know, we hear people around the world having Divine Mother appear to them, and Divine Mother appeared to Yogananda. And when she appeared, she said these words, "Always have I loved thee, ever shall I love thee." And he was taken to this state of the highest bliss, and he stayed in that state. And then the way these masters and saints play with each other, he went back to Mahasaya the next day, and he said, "You said you were going to give me an experience of Divine Mother. Aren't you going to do it?" And he said, "Oh, you tease me. I know she came to you last night." And Swami Kriyananda, again, the founder of Ananda in our Ananda tradition, really loved Divine Mother. And he wanted to go to all the sites where Divine Mother has appeared to children. So he made it to
Medjugorje. I don't remember.
Maybe that's the only one he actually physically got to go to. He wrote a story called Pilgrimage to Guadalupe. Yeah, about a person who was going there, and anyway,
where Divine Mother appeared in
Latin America, and he wanted to go to Lourdes. But I don't think he made it. Anyway, so he also loved Divine Mother, wrote songs about Divine Mother, wrote the Mother of Wisdom song. And so that receptivity that we talk about, that is the feminine quality of nature, to be receptive, to accept and receive. And it's that quality, I'm going to wrap it up quickly, that actually gives us the power. I was driving over in the car and I said, "Viraj, I don't know how to talk about power of God. I don't really know how to talk about that. We have energy in our path. We have will, energy, you know, that piece of it." And then I thought, I know how I can think of it. When Rajasi Janakananda, who was Yogananda's most advanced male disciple when he was living, he was a self-made millionaire who funded Yogananda's work and early on went into samadhi in the presence of Yogananda because he'd been a great soul for many incarnations, and by a touch he did go into samadhi. And we have pictures of him sitting on the lawn just in samadhi with his, you know, radiant face. And this was a man who was in business meetings and very, very busy outward life, but would come and visit Yogananda and have these deep, deep experiences. And and at one point, Yogananda told him to take over the work when he left, which he did for a brief time. But at one point, we'd often see them at satsangs, Kriya initiations and various things, and you'd see them holding hands together and both of them just so much enjoying being in that consciousness, sharing that, you know, divine consciousness together. And at one point, Yogananda, in the hearing of others, probably four others, said to Rajasi Janakananda, "Well, what did he call him?
Don't forget."
Just Rajasi. I guess he called him Rajasi. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, he said.
St. Lin.
Yeah, he did call him Satan in other times. But he said, don't forget where your power comes from. Because he had a lot of spiritual power and it was manifested in many ways. Oh, I won't, Master. It comes from you. You know, like a little child. He was often like a little child around his scooter. This great soul, great man, great powerful businessman, all the ways of the world, but spiritually too. But he said, I won't. It comes from you. So again, it ties it back to, you know, that power, all that he could do came from his attunement, his receptivity, his realizing that God was the doer. Swami Kriyananda did a lot of things in his life, moved a lot of energy, primarily and most importantly within the people, he still does, but within the books and music and all the other ways. And he said, the only way I did it was by realizing that I wasn't the doer. God was doing it through me. So he was constantly in that state of receptivity, receiving what God could give to him and then sharing it with others. So that receptivity in the stillness of our hearts, in our meditations, in our daily actions to see God coming through us, receiving and giving, is the way to attaining that self-realization that we've all been attracted to and are working on.